You're listening to LGRadio.online. I'm Leo Green. Welcome to In Conversation.
Me and my girl meant for each other.
In our last episode of In Conversation with Robert Lindsay, Robert was telling us about life on Broadway when he was in New York starring in Me and My Girl. Robert, I wanted to ask you this. All the stories we heard about Americans, you know, repeatedly getting you to change lines and change, you know, bits of the script because they didn't understand the Cockney vernacular. Was that exaggerated or did that actually happen?
My favorite story, there are many stories about the thing, but I remember when in the rehearsals, the producers all came to see a little snippet.
Yeah.
And one of the lines was, "What happened to your parents, William?" I said, "They're Ovis, mate. They're Ovis." And they go, what's Hovis, Bob? I said, "Well, it's brown bread." "Okay, brown bread. Yeah, what does that doesn't rhyme." I said, no. "Brown bread rhymes with dead, you see, but brown bread, it comes Ovis." "Right, okay. So I got a memo the next morning saying, "Can we change Hovis to whole wheat or rye?" And then there's a great musical director on Broadway. I mean, he was the Stanley Lebowski.
Great name.
This guy was the top man. I mean, I just loved him. He actually died during the run I had, but I remember my rehearsals with him. Well, you know, "Me and my girl meant for..." "No, Bob, this is Broadway, we gotta go big." And I go, what it's gotta be "Me and my girl." I said, no, it's and then the Lambeth Walk, that was I just thought, one of the funniest things I ever saw was this Forbidden Broadway. It's a real piss take.
Yeah.
And I went to see it in New York, and they'd done a thing of Lambeth Walk.
Right.
Which, because it's one of those songs that just never ends. You just don't know when it's ever going to end. It's just, please stop this bloody thing. And they did this thing, and this guy playing me came on as a young man, "Doing the Lambeth, doing the Lambeth Walk, hey, we're going in again." And then he got older and older as this thing went on, to the point the last scene he comes on in a Zimmer frame. I know Elaine Page plays it a lot on a Sunday, you know, and it is a cheery number, but my God, you just think, please stop.
"Lambeth, you've never seen. The skies ain't blue, the grass, it ain't green. It hasn't got the Mayfair touch, but, well, that don't matter very much. We play a different way, not like you, but a bit more gay. When we have a bit of fun, oh boy. Any time you're Lambeth way, any evening, any day, you'll find us all doing the Lambeth walk. Oh, every little Lambeth gal with a little Lambeth pal, you'll find them all doing the Lambeth walk. Oi, everything free and easy. Do as you don't, well, please, eh? Why don't you make your way there? Go there, stay there. Once you get down Lambeth way, every evening, every day, you'll find yourself doing the Lambeth walk. Oi!
Any time you're Lambeth way, any evening, any day, you'll find us all doing the Lambeth walk. Oi! Every little Lambeth gal with a little Lambeth pal, you'll find them all doing the Lambeth walk.
Oi! Everything bright and breezy, do as you darn well please. Why don't you make your way there? Go there!
ever a point there with that, you know, with all that success at the West End and on Broadway where you thought, okay, enough now, enough?
Oh, yeah, enough's enough. Yeah. But that happens in everything, God, you do. I mean, God, I did Scoundrels for a year and a half. Guys and Dolls, I've done Oliver at the Palladium.
You've done so much stuff. I mean, just looking at all the roles you've played so far, there's an amazing amount of variety in those roles. I can't think of anyone else who's played both the part of Wolfie Smith and Cyrano de Bergerac.
That was a stunning production. I think it's all to do with losing the accent at RADA. I think that's what they were saying. You know, if you want to be an actor and want to be versatile, you need to have a what they call an RP accent, you know.
Right.
But I spent a couple of hours with my brother, who's a carpenter, and my accent comes back.
Well, you know, the past is never far away from us. You know, we do find ourselves in extraordinary times at the moment. How would you have spent your time as a kid if you'd had to self-isolate with your parents back in the 50s?
Well, it would have been music in my house, definitely, and the radio. I mean, the radio was our lifeline. I mean, that's how I first got to know Dad, obviously. In fact, God, I miss his shows. In fact, because I did Parkinson a few times, and I remember because he did it for a while, didn't he, that Sunday slot?
Yeah.
He was almost on the verge of doing what Benny did, you know, with the great classics and the great standards, which I used to love. So it just made Sunday to me.
It's so lovely to hear that, Robert. I mean, you know, aside from the fact he was my dad, let's just park that to one side. The reason I love those shows was because, you know, Benny actually spent time with Ira Gershwin or Frank Sinatra. So, you know, you're hearing firsthand what those guys were like and how some of the most loved songs of all time came to be written.
Yeah.
You know, I've got loads of his recordings. I've no idea if there's any interest for people to hear them, but I think it was just having someone like Benny, who was also a musician, talk about music was so different from just a regular presenter.
Yeah, but it's also, as you quite rightly say, your dad's knowledge of the recordings and the. I mean, he knew. That's what made the show to me fascinating. You know, the orchestrations of it, the when it was done and under what circumstances the song was made, and I used to love that.
And you did actually work with Dad, didn't you? I know that you guys, well, in fact, right up to Benny's death, you were working on a movie with Dad and the composer Laurie Johnson, based on the life of Charles Dickens, weren't you?
Yes, I mean, it was. What they captured so brilliantly was the Laurie and Benny was the fact that Dickens was an actor, not a very good one, but that's what he loved, and he was brilliant speaker and entertained, made his evenings an evening with, you know, and so it needed an actor, thank you, who could do impersonations, tell stories, you know, sing, dance, and that's what Dickens was very good at, and that's what they captured, and I think that's why it would have been terrific, because most of the Dickens films that they do now tend to be quite about his sex life, his mistress, his and it was about the man, the performer.
Robert, people would have loved seeing you play the part of Charles Dickens.
I just remember one day Rosie answered the phone, she said, you've got Lou Grade on the phone. I said, what? Bob, it's Lou. I love this idea of you playing Charles Dickens in Benny's script. I think I want to do it. And I thought, oh my God. So I remember ringing Benny up. I said, Benny knew. He said he'll always ring the artist first. He said, the writers come second.
It's such a shame, because that would have been an incredible movie, wouldn't it?
No, that would have been brilliant, because what they captured so well was, because the irony is now I'm president of the Royal Theatrical Fund, which Charles Dickens started.
Right.
And of course, that's why he started the Royal Theatrical Fund. He loved actors. He just loved actors.
And is Dickens someone that you read a lot of as a kid or as an actor?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read all those famous novels when I was a kid. I mean, that's all and reading was, of course, my life. And not that we had any books in the bloody house. My dad, I think National Geographic And the only other thing was Lady Chatterley's Lover. That's what I used to find on my dad's pillow, yeah, tucked away. But once I got to my junior school and then met my amazing art teacher and English teacher, I really got into books big time. Always reading.
It is funny, isn't it? I mean, do you ever find yourself going back and revisiting some of those books now?
Yeah, funny enough, I dug out Treasure Island the other night. I just thought, oh, that's a bit of an escapist thing. Can't go on holiday this year. Get Treasure Island up. What a great book.
It's funny, isn't it? Again, how the past, no matter how distant, it never seems that far away. Musicians I've spoken to especially seem to always keep returning to the music of their youth, you know, the stuff that first ignited something in them when they were 13 or 14. Is it the same for actors? Do you find yourself returning to the same old books and plays and films of your youth?
Yeah, exactly that. It's called going home, going back to your roots, going back to what started it. I think when you start getting a little jaded and a little bit long in the tooth and a little bit like, oh, you know, I don't really care. I think you have to make a return to what inspired you, you know, what started it all off. That's how I feel about it.
I mean, it does seem there really are definitely, you know, similarities between our industries. I mean, musicians quite often are judged and defined by what they did in their early 20s, you know, at the start of their career. Do you get fed up constantly of being presented with your professional self from one role you played 30 years ago, given how much work you've done?
Yeah, I've got used to it now. I mean, Citizen Smith never goes away. I mean, I remember I went to a BBC party. You know, the BBC used to have parties at the when we had Wood Lane.
Yeah.
And I remember going to this party, and there was everybody, and Malcolm and Wise were there, and I was coming out rather pissed with Nick Lyndhurst from Only Fools and Horses, and we were standing outside them, and we were trying to hail a cab, and this cab went past, saw Nick Lyndhurst, and shouted out the window, "Plonker!" And then the other cab came the other way and saw me and went, "Power to the people!" And Nick Lyndhurst looked at me and he went, "I wish I had your catchphrase."
I mean, My Family is, of course, another of your shows that's become part of our collective cultural fabric, if you like, and has run several seasons. But you nearly clipped its wings on that, didn't you? What happened there?
Because I was going to turn it down after the second series. I thought, I've had enough of this. And my dad said, "You can't turn that down. People love it." I said, "Yeah, but it's a bit, I want to do something a bit, you know, a bit more out there." And he said, "No, but it's great. I can sit and watch it with my grandkids."
Right, yeah.
He said, there's lots of adult jokes in there. And he said, kids don't get it. And the kids get jokes that I don't get.
Well, I guess good writing and great acting never goes out of style. But on a show like My Family, I suppose the writers and a long-running thing like that are crucial, aren't they?
My Family was the first showrunning, what they call showrunner. It was an American team.
Right.
And English writers. It was 12 writers. They had a showroom and with a producer and showrunner.
Yeah.
And, of course, it caused an absolute storm at the BBC because, you know, the BBC just had a writer. You had a writer and a script. You didn't have showrunners.
Sure.
But it was fantastic because they could change a script. You'd go in the writer's room and say, "Can you try this gag out or this joke?" Or was, you tell them a story about what happened to you in the last week, you know, with the kids or something. And they installed it into the show.
Amazing. So you guys had a creative input into the show?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Me and Zoe had a lot of big input. Yeah.
But yet you guys are not credited as co-writers, or you are?
No. It doesn't work like that. Hence the fact of me and Emma on Me and My Girl, you know.
There does seem to be a lot of similarities, again, between your game and mine, in that sometimes, you know, as a musician, a gun for hire, you know, you find yourself in the studio, everyone's coming up with musical ideas and lines, and yet when it comes out and you hear the song on the radio, you're like, hang on
a minute, that's my bit.
Exactly.
Yeah, the thing that frightens me about the music industry now, talent shows and competitions. I mean, I think, again, I've been asked to do Strictly Come Dancing. You know, I'm asked every single year to do it. I just think, it drives me insane. You know, I just don't understand the almost gladiatorial aspect of an aging golfer. in his 60s, dancing with a beautiful long-legged dancer. And then you get a girl who's obviously trained balletically all her life, who wins it. You know, what's that all about?
Yeah.
And these, and the X Factor thing, you know, and that's the other thing that really bogs me about the industry that we, that I live in and that you work in, that we will... trained and passionate about. These kids think it's all glory. You just, you know, you get on a ladder and you go to the top. No, no. I mean, the girl that won Andrew Lloyd Webber's Finding Something or other, you know, well, she lasted a week and she was off because she lost her voice.
8 shows a week in the West End is brutal. I have to ask you now, we've reached this point of the conversation and talking about the West End. Is there a role that would get you back into that kind of relentless routine?
Well, it depends. Yes and no. I mean, the thought of doing 8 shows a week at the moment just fills me with horror at my age now. But I think if the right thing came along...
Well, you're not going to ask you now then. What are the roles that you haven't yet had a chance to get to grips with that might tempt you?
I've always wanted to do cabaret.
Right.
And I think you can play that at any age, actually.
What about, you know, do some of the more contemporary musicals interest you?
See, I'm not a great Sondheim fan, I have to say, apart from Company, which I think was his best. I'm not a Sondheim disciple. In fact, when I open Me and My Girl, I'm dropping names like crazy now, but then Benny could do that. I'm not so bad. I can get away with it at my age. But Katharine Hepburn was a huge fan of... Me and My Girl. She saw it 4 times, and one night she invited me up to her home for supper.
Fantastic.
We drank a lot of whiskey together. We had supper with her 3 nieces. They were made to leave around 9:30, so one of the nights off, my Sunday night off.
Yeah.
And she started pouring out whiskey, and she said, you know, before I die, I'd love to dance with you. And she had this beautiful communal garden that she lived on the Upper East Side in this beautiful brownstone house,
yeah,
of which the front door was open. That was the weird thing. And in the 80s in New York, you know, you did not leave your front door open. But anyway, so we go into the garden with our whiskies, and she puts on some music, and we start dancing or just standing talking about the show and careers and things, and suddenly there's this plonky plonky on a piano, really discordant, and she suddenly went, oh, Stephen, quiet, I can't stand that. And I looked up, and there on a balcony with a little upright piano, it's the baby grand actually, was the famous Stephen Sondheim.
No.
She said, he's a, well, I think, what was the phrase she used? Once he stamps his tiny jeweled heel, he's a vicious little queen. Aren't you, Stephen? She was amazing. No, she was, my God, she was an incredible lady.
Oh, my goodness.
I love her.
Listen to that. What an amazing story. Listen, Robert, thank you so much for your time today. I'm so grateful. But before you go, I have to ask you this question, because sitting here listening to these amazing stories, you've done so many different roles and left such an incredibly indelible mark on your industry. I've got to ask you, what on earth would you have done if you hadn't have gone into the acting game?
Oh, bloody hell. My favourite story about that was my brother came to live with me in Chiswick when I first moved to London. And he was, because he's a man, he builds his own house, he's a builder, he's a master carpenter. I remember he plastered this entire wall, it looked absolutely staggering. And I was going to hang up my first picture of me in a play. And as I put the tack into the wall, I hit the only pipe, which spurted water out of the wall and literally pulled down most of the plaster. And we both stood there like Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy. And he went, he looked at me and he went, you stick to acting and I'll do the building, all right? And that's when I realised that I was not going to get very far in life.
Oh, listen, Robert, thank you so much for your time today. We really, really appreciate it. Listen, take care.
All right. Take care.
Oh, what an amazing man, the one and only Robert Lindsay, one of our greatest. Do check the website, lgradio.online, for more info, or if you want to see when we'll be running that show again. In the meantime, don't forget you can contact us via the website, and do let me know who else you'd like to hear me chat with. I'm Leo Green, and you're listening to lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.